Hello, I am Mayor Watt. That is ohmtown.com. That's what powers this show. I stream here on Twitch and then copy everything over to YouTube and a podcast called ohmtown. The subsection of this is ohmtown Daily News Show. This is the ohmtown Daily News Show. The aggregator that powers ohmtown and ohmtown Daily News Show and all of its subordinate I've got construction going on, and it was quiet until just now. Relatively quiet. All right. Well, they're cutting into my house. Because I work out of my house and I telework, and I do the show in my home office. Anyway, let's get into today's news. I will try and get through this as fast as possible, but I will end up soapboxing. I've had an interesting morning. I've been watching popular news, not the news that's fun and entertaining and whatnot, but the stuff that people are kind of burnt out about, I guess. But you know, I go through it so that you don't have to, I suppose, but I'm happy to talk about it. And I actually prefer talking about it. It's all impacting our lives, even if you don't want it to. It really is. And the title for this episode is actually wrong, even though I've corrected it. Today is June 17th. It's episode 168. I don't have titles for the episodes that I do here on Twitch because I am actually watching this, looking at the articles as I bring them up here on the stream. It's a bummer. Every once in a while I see people come in and then they don't say anything. And I would really like you to say something. Come in and say hello and say, hey, this sucks or this is awesome. And give me some feedback. I suppose if people aren't sticking around, then I'm not a hot mess sort of a thing. Maybe it's cringy. I don't know. But anyway, let's get into today's news. So what I've been watching has been kind of a mishmash of various types of news, mainly popular news like the Amber Heard trial and Ezra Miller hot mess and January 6th hot mess and like what they were referring to as LawTube, attorneys on YouTube talking about January 6th and basically saying that it's a hot mess and not legally sufficient for anything and et cetera, et cetera. But it's a congressional hearing and there are legal ramifications. So I'm not sure why it's being diluted as to its agency with law, but I'm not an attorney. And again, I've said this before in previous ones, even if I was an attorney, I'm not your attorney. So everything that I'm talking about it should be taken with a grain of salt, right? If you don't think that it's important, then I suppose, I don't know, if you don't value my opinion, then I guess why are you watching or listening? And based on the fact that I'm not out there hyping myself up and not asking people to talk about me elsewhere, I guess, I suppose. And nobody is in my chat, I suppose. You know, there isn't anything there. But ohmtown has been running for years. I use it in my daily life. I use it in my business efforts as well. And everything that I do is based on my desire to do so. So I am here to talk about the news. And I've got already about 20 articles or so. And they run a pretty broad gamut of things. Again, I talk at the merging of business, technology, and society. Those are my areas of expertise, so to speak. And I definitely won't say that I'm the smartest person in the room. There's always somebody better out there. So, but my opinion is something that I will provide as I go through the news. So come over, hang out, throw in some comments in chat. Let me know you're out there, and be sure to follow that right there. I have a goal. My schedule has been screwing everything up, so people haven't been able to come regularly and hang out. That probably irritated a bunch of people. But let's get into the news. And if you see something as I go through it, through the news, if you go over to ometown.com and go through the news, you'll find something. And if you're interested, throw it in chat and I'll pull it up on the screen and we can talk about it. I've been in business and technology and doing research in sociology over the years, and so I like to talk about it now. And again, somebody came in and then disappeared. Anyway, let's get into today's news. So the very first article is actually something more as a reference for those of you who are entrepreneurial in nature, or just pretty damn curious about things. And it is the Pitch Deck Library that I always seem to promote here on Hometown Daily News. It's over at Business Insider. I'm waiting for my mixer to analyze the data that's coming and remove the power tools that are going off in my backyard. Fascinating watching that happen in real time. I mean, they are loud, and I'm actually about 20 feet up. Okay, at any rate, this is in the Hatch Ideas channel, and that's because Hatch Ideas is about business, entrepreneurship, business transformation, intellectual property, etc. I actually have a special show about intellectual property under Right Protect, where we talk about, in the context of the United States, patents, trademarks, copyright, and associated things like plagiarism and whatnot. At any rate, this pitch deck library that I was talking about, you can search over 750 pitch decks that startups, including Uber, Postmates, and Airbnb, use to raise millions. I've provided a couple of these links over time, and I think that it's valuable to see what others are doing, even if they're way outside your league. Whatever you were interested in launching, don't think that you can't reach this point, but also don't treat it as the rule of success, because that's far from it. This is an article that was written by Madeline Renbarger over at businessinsider.com, and it says billions of dollars in venture capital flow every year to startups that can articulate their visions in a way that makes investors see dollar signs. That is far and away not the only indicator. This pitch deck allows you to keep the door open. Okay, so people who are interested in investing in a company, their door is open always for opportunity. But if you roll in there and you act like you have everything and you can't demonstrate that you have everything that is needed to be successful, there isn't an investor in the world that will invest in you. If you are a hot mess and they don't see success, then they won't invest. Plain and simple. When I first started, I was 18 years old and thinking that I had all of the answers and whatnot. And the first thing that somebody told me is that my enterprise was so young that nobody would respect it in the world of venture capital. And for the most part, that was absolutely true. Nobody was interested in an 18-year-old that didn't have political contacts, that didn't have great wealth, but was fully capable of launching the idea. And in fact, the idea had already been launched, and since then I've launched several others. But that initial project was already launched. I had been running it out of a two-bedroom apartment with a programmer friend of mine, and I kept on pitching it to people. And ultimately, what happened was 8 months later, a competitor came out that was politically connected and already well funded, and they dominated the market until they had to pivot because growth isn't perpetual. And I understood that. And I also understood that I didn't need great margins for me personally. What I wanted was the success of the business, of the idea of my baby being born into the world and everybody getting to partake. Needless to say, that project went to somebody else ultimately, and all right, long story short, ended up being wiped out by somebody who didn't want to launch a multi, well, what was coined a mega corporation. And because of the way that things went down, I just didn't bother picking up the pieces from it because I was watching the market change. Well, during that time, I'm pitching this for investors and people are looking at me saying, you need what I was, what was told to me was gray. I needed gray. And they're talking about some old dude, gray hair, with the wisdom of the business enterprise and the sector. And really, technology is, you know, far and away not bound by age. If you are engaged and fully capable of programming or at least having some type of conversation skills, you have the ability to communicate probably better than what I'm doing right here. You could be 15 years old in high school and launch a business that can be very, very lucrative, very lucrative. But it really amounts to political connections, the ability to communicate, money that allows you to not have to worry about where your next meal comes from, things like that. And that last one is actually a social issue. And research has bore out that if you have to worry about where your house is or where your meal is or clothing or the fundamentals of society, then you're not going to be able to excel academically or professionally because you're too worried about food. Yes, there are always going to be anomalies. Yes, there will always be people that, you know, penetrate that market regardless of their financial or political or social limitations. Why? Because they have some type of energy around them that they embody into success. But not everybody has that. I certainly don't have that. I'm not that hungry. But I am hungry for other people, right? So I can help other people, mainly because there's a whole lot of effort involved in overcoming obstacles, and I'm not the one that needs to overcome these obstacles. When I get older, I probably will need to have already done that, but at any rate. So go over and look at these pitch decks and see what these other people have done. But understand that far and away, it's all about execution and not just the idea. Nobody really cares about the idea. I used to fight that concept. Just, I always got angry when people said, it's not about the idea. It's about execution. And well, you can't execute on a vapid idea, on nothing. You have to have the idea. You have to have the idea guy or person, I should say. It just historically, it's always been referred to as idea guy. But the idea person is the game changer. It's the one that disrupts. It's the one that challenges preconceived notions. It's the one that finds the hole and sticks something in there and says, this fixes that problem. So you can't execute on a vacuum. You have to have the idea, but you can't execute an idea if you don't have every other piece of the puzzle in place. Even if it's baby steps, you have to take those baby steps, and that's execution. But you can't, if you don't have an idea, then you can't execute. if the idea is gone. So if it's missing, if it doesn't really exist, if you don't have a minimum viable product or service, which is really a product, if you don't have the MVP, then it doesn't really matter. You can't execute on nothing. So if you have an idea, go and look at all of these other pitch decks and find something that is somewhere in your industry. And you can definitely search for the industry. You just search for a name, something that you might think is a competitor. You know, there's a whole bunch in cannabis right now. Those are going to end up being merged, and it's probably going to be merged into a tobacco company once cannabis is legalized federally. Right now, there's too much risk. The money that is in the cannabis market isn't federally insured because you can't store your money in a bank in the conventional sense. You have to use something other than federally insured because it's illegal. Cannabis is still federally illegal. You can go through medical profession, but it's the medical profession that legalizes it for a particular person and not an entire sector, as far as I understand it. So the only reason why I said cannabis is because it's right here on the screen. So go over and check it out. Yeah, I think it's a great resource for everybody who is interested in being an entrepreneur or curious. Let's go on to the next article. And this is about January 6th. Yep, a lot of people aren't interested in this, but guess what? It's impacting your world. So just hang out and listen for a bit. This is a Trump attorney. John Eastman was warned January 6th would cause riots and didn't care. I watched this yesterday, and it was quite fascinating to hear that everybody in the orbit of Eastman thought that he was crazy. And I also think that there's another article, and it's the very next one that we'll get into here in a moment. But I think it's fascinating that anybody would argue that the Constitution ever thought that one person could dictate to the American population since the dawning of the United States, right? That one person could dictate to everyone what the election would be. There is zero historical context for it, too, until you get to the king, to the monarchy, until you get to dictators, until you get to fascists. There has never been an instance where one person was deciding the fate of a nation, and it was a it's always been a plurality. It's always been Congress. It's always been the totality of Congress, right? And it's a three-part ecosystem where there's checks and balances. My problem right now is that senators have ever-increasing influence on the outcomes of political discourse, whereas the House of Representatives is diluted over time. And here you have one person saying that one person can decide the fate of an election. And then when questioned, Eastman responded to the question, well, what about Gore in 2000? And what about Kamala Harris in 2024 deciding the fate of an election by sending out the electors and saying redo it? And Eastman says, no, that's not right. But now it's right to for the Vice President Pence to send it back out. I mean, it's all bananas, fascist, crazy that anyone, particularly in law, would suggest that our Constitution, the framers of our Constitution, ever intended that one person could decide the fate of an election and the course of our country. And when people sit there and chant and rave that it's our country, no. It's not one-sided country, okay? It's the plurality, and more people need to remain engaged. Which is why I talk about it here, even if people aren't interested in talking about it here. You'll hear it from me, and maybe the people that are on Twitch and on YouTube and whatnot will eventually discover me, but we'll see. It says here, Trump White House counsel Eric Hirschman testified in footage shown by the House January 6th Select Committee on Thursday that he warned Eastman his quote-unquote crazy plot to have the Vice President Mike Pence overturn the 2020 election would lead to widespread violence. I don't know if that's true. You can't really argue for the unprovable. It didn't happen. There wasn't anything that came of this other than discussion. After the coup attempt failed, it did show though a whole lot of people's colors, and I'm saddened by the fact that people are entertaining the idea that it's polar like this, and that there's a large enough cohort to overturn an election, and that there really are just two gangs, the Democrats and the Republicans, and the general population is kept fighting on the floor while the ultra rich and politically connected and those who think that they have a chance at that are eating very well at the table while the plurality, the people, are still fighting on the floor. And if you think that you are being oppressed because you're one of the ones that wanted the coup to take place, if you think you're being oppressed, let me tell you, you don't know what the hell you're talking about because you're not. Although not everybody has ample opportunity, the problem is that the culture is to hero worship all of the people that are currently in power, and keeping them in power, vote them out, move them on. But you know why you can't? Because big money is paying for all of it. And it isn't just the general electors, it's the people who have money, have political power, have connections. They're the ones that are saying yay or nay to things, because money talks and the people's voice is gone. I mean, you can rant and rave all you want, like I'm doing, but it's not going to move the needle one way or the other. If something wants to be done, it'll get done, but it's going to get done because I think every political personality should have a massive list and of all of their donors, ranked exactly who they are by the amount of money they are, and that way people can audit what's going on. Why is a decision being made for a particular company? Well, it's probably because so much money is being thrown their way. And it should be like a NASCAR vehicle. The companies that are donating well outside the personal donation levels should be known. And the number and the people that are donating, their names should be known. And all of these PACs and other BS that hides identity and puts people beyond arm's reach of awareness, shine light on people so that that the world knows, that not just the world, but the US population knows who is paying for representation. And that's why I think Citizens United is a horrible concept, because that is what has allowed nearly unlimited funds, super PACs and Citizens United basically has invalidated the common man's voice, common person's voice. Let me restate that. The terminology is becoming archaic, common man, man hours worth of work, etc. Even though man is a concept, is of humans in general. But again, I agree, it's an archaic term that is slowly dying off. Anyway, let's click the link. It'll take. I had to soapbox today, folks. Yesterday was a real, well, horrible day. Okay, so let's move on. The next article is, or I'm sorry, the article that I didn't link to yet, is over in Vice by Cameron Joseph. Trump attorney Eastman admitted his January 6th plot was illegal and asked for a pardon. Quote, I've decided that I should be on the pardon list if that's still in the works, says John Eastman as he emailed the request to Rudy Giuliani after January 6th. Yeah, nothing says I'm doing legal things like asking for a pardon as a list is being developed. Yeah, these are called co-conspirators. This is the business plot revisited. And back in the 1930s, there was a business plot of fascist business owners, and that's what fascism is, to overthrow the government and install a fascist leader that would be purely business-oriented, have the interests of a select number of people, and pivot the country into a corporatocracy of fascism. And now we have basically the equivalent, but throw in a few other things. So he admitted on the eve of January 6th that his flimsy election plot was illegal. So all of this shows that there was a conspiracy and that there was illegal activity and that all of these people should be brought up on charges for conspiracy to overthrow the government, sedition, treason. Keep on piling it on. But everybody thought that this was batshit crazy. So why did I say that there is a bigger issue here? Earlier on, I said that we'll get into more of this today, and it's because it's the weekend, and everybody should be mulling this stuff over, and then we hit the ground running again on Monday. I'm talking about news, although tomorrow I'll be here talking about the news over the last 24 hours. It probably won't be political unless something really big happens. But the next one is about the Supreme Court. And this is one of the more interesting things because a lot of people didn't really, you know, care about Ginny Thomas. But here we are. Did Ginny Thomas give John Eastman intel on a heated fight at SCOTUS? And this is what I'm talking about, that I said this yesterday, I said this maybe a few times before. Not everybody gets the same information that's actionable at the same level or the same time. There's all this talk about insider trading is illegal and whatnot, but there's different levels of insider information. And it says, first Eastman suggested in a private email on December 24th, 2020, that he had, quote unquote, insider information about a heated fight taking place at the Supreme Court over whether they'd, I guess, like to, there's a typo in, or missing words in this sentence, whether they'd like to hear or are willing to hear arguments on Trump's attempts to overturn his election loss, the New York Times reported early this morning. And that was after the 24-hour period for my show yesterday. So that was yesterday. So today, and this is after the hearings, now Ginny Thomas is saying that she wants to talk to the January 6th commission. But my problem here is that there was somebody that was actively informing people. That's what it sounds like. And particularly Eastman about a heated fight within the Supreme Court of the United States. And my problem here is there should not be a heated argument about the foundation of if the decision should be on one person who really is a subordinate in the hierarchy. They run Congress only at certain times and it's ceremonial in nature. They don't have absolute control over Congress, but the vice president does not have the right to send back electors because if the states didn't intend to certify electors, then they shouldn't have certified electors. You should not be able to look back and go, I got paid more, or I was promised something and I want to pull back the electors and say something else. No, it should be certified, and that's what took place. And it should be certified on valid information, and that's what took place. And there, I have never seen any valid evidence that there were election irregularities, except for from the Republicans who are saying, you know, like that one guy that I keep talking about, but there's multitudes of this where a person is saying, my dead wife voted for a Democrat. And it turned out that he was the one that did it, and he admitted to it, and he's up for charges on tampering, election tampering. So, really, again, I say every accusation is a confession of their they're saying what they are doing out loud and gaslighting everybody. And they being these certain conspiratorial people. And it's frustrating as someone that has critical thinking skills to see this being played out and everybody, other people gaslighting this as if, oh, there's copious amounts of evidence. Really? Display it. Post it somewhere. Where is this evidence? There isn't. But my problem here is that did Ginni Thomas give information to an outsider when they were talking to their husband, who is a Supreme Court justice, and there's a whole lot of history with Ginni Thomas, right? It's weird. You know, my life is so freaking boring that even if you were to audit my history, it would amount to a sleeping pill. You would just fall asleep because my life is boring. But you're not going to catch me doing insider trading. Why? Because I can't. My moral compass, my ethics don't allow me to. You know, people have provided information about their business and stuff where it would be easy to act on it, but you can't act on it. And I don't need some superior anything to say, don't do it. Why? Because my moral compass, my ethical compass doesn't allow me to act on information that is privileged. But others do. And we have a history of it happening in Congress. We have a history of it happening in business. And there's a whole bunch of people that think that they are an opportunity away from being absolutely successful. But really, that opportunity is usually selfish in nature, right? You even go to America's Got Talent. And the reason why somebody's given an opportunity isn't necessarily because they have talent, because there's a lot of people that have talent. But it's an opportunity for somebody to sign them up and make money off of them. And everybody who goes there has that. It's a chance at the brass ring. But it's really bound on the idea of not just, you know, it's really wholesome that we're going to give somebody an opportunity to become famous. But post your videos on YouTube, you'll be discovered. But this is a fast track, right? And nobody's ever going to buck that system because they think that they're that far away from being world famous. It's just not going to happen unless somebody decides, oh, the producers, and not just of the show. I'm talking about ground level producers of goods, services, shows, whatever. They're the ones that are dictating if you are going to have an opportunity or not. And it's always from a position of authority where they have the means to provide you out of the graciousness of their, well, wallet. So did Ginni Thomas give anything to Eastman, who seemingly everybody has a concerted voice that his plan was crazy, if not him, but. So Eastman said he knew about an internal heated fight at the Supreme Court, and he was talking to Justice Clarice Thomas's wife. This is Cameron Joseph over at Vice.com and a section called Vice News. So this all happened before January 6th. People knew that January 6th was going to happen. And one senator, I think it was a senator, even posted that today is 1776. I mean, it's all crazy. It's all crazy. The odds are not based on the legal merits, but an assessment of the justices' spines. And I understand that there is a heated fight underway. Eastman emailed pro-Trump Kenneth lawyer, pro-Trump lawyer Kenneth Chesebro, or Chesebro, I don't know how his last name is pronounced, don't really care, who replied that, quote, odds of action before January 6th will become more favorable if the justices start to fear that there will be wild chaos on January 6th unless they rule by then either way. Imagine the Supreme Court is in fear of wild chaos, and that's their decision. The Supreme Court is supposed to not be populist. It's supposed to be founded in the legality of an action. It's supposed to see a case and say, yeah, we reaffirm it, or no, send it back and have it redressed with this guidance. They don't have a finding, yay or nay. They say this should be reheard. But if they reaffirm it, like in Roe v. Wade, it should have been codified as such and take really something closer to picking a glacier up and moving it somewhere to change the tenor of that law, because the Supreme Court reaffirmed it. So it really does have a great amount of historical legality to it. It's founded in this precedent, this the nature of the law, because it's being reviewed based on that historical context from the Constitution, from the dawning of the United States on. It's not supposed to be populist in nature. It's supposed to be immune from populism. But that's not what happens when you inject somebody, you force somebody in that obviously has religious and political overtones instead of legal overtones. The bias is tangible. You can feel it now. It's worth noting that Eastman and the Thomases have deep, decades-old ties. Eastman clerked for Clarence Thomas in 1996 and 97, early on in his career. Thomas also has ties with Claremont Institute, where Eastman works. The Supreme Court Justice has spoken there in the past and regularly quotes the Institute's founder. That network of clerks is known generally to have remained close, even by the cozy standards of the Supreme Court. And we also know that Ginni Thomas played an active role in trying to push to overturn the 2020 election. She actively lobbied, and they link to information, lawmakers in D.C. and in key swing states to try to overturn President-elect Joe Biden's election victories, and was in touch with the White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows and others in Trump's orbit, urging them not to concede long after it was clear Trump had lost. That should have been illegal. But apparently not, because a conflict of interest doesn't exist. There were a lot of complaints about certain, I'll just say attorneys. And suddenly when their position changed from attorney to Supreme Court justice, all of it goes away because he's not an attorney anymore. He's not bound by the bar. And it's not Thomas that I'm talking about. Although there might be issues with Thomas too. I'd have to do a deep dive to find out. But it's unsettling. It's unsettling that someone this close to the body that is deciding the fate, the course of the United States at this level, is out there lobbying for their particular angle. And then suddenly it gets embodied in the Supreme Court of the United States. You know, if I divulge any information about what I do to somebody, I could be open for investigation, but I don't. You know, it jeopardizes everybody in my orbit. So why is this okay? Even the optics of it. But apparently it's okay. Why? Because they have the means to litigate until everybody just drops dead. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Georgia GOP Senate nominee Herschel Walker admits to having more secret kids, now saying he has 4. I don't know about you, but having secret kids is kind of odd. Georgia Republican Senate nominee Herschel Walker now admitted to having 3 secret children. Walker previously said he only had one, but he's disclosing having a 10-year-old son on Tuesday. A day later, Walker acknowledged having two more children with other women. Herschel Walker apparently walked around. The Trump-endorsed Georgia Republican Senate nominee. Well, you can't be pro-family unless you start families. And former NFL running back. Should probably run the hell out of Senate. Anyway, confirmed the existence of two more secret children. They're secret children. I have a mic right here. I'm not talking into my crotch. Secret children, by the way. Okay. Shh. They're secret. But if you say anything about it, then you're attacking the children. Yet, they're secret. Earlier in the week, the Daily Beast first reported that Walker, who had previously said he was the father of only one child, is now up to four. That we know of, folks, that we know of. He ran right into the bedroom. So this is an article over at Business Insider by Jake LaHut. Or LaHoot. I'm not sure how he pronounces their last name. Herschel Walker, the Trump-endorsed Georgia Republican Senate nominee, and I don't know how anybody can... anyway. According to Arkansas court documents, Walker accrued $4,919 in missed child support payments for one of the women, ranging from... October 2006 to June 2017, Walker had publicly derided fathers who do not raise their children, and on the campaign trail, he's presented himself as a caring dad. Everybody is equal, except some people are more equal. Herschel said that when a man has a child with a woman, even if you have to leave that woman, you don't leave the child. Uh-huh. I'm sure everything is not an issue here, folks. Not an issue. The next article is over in the Mobile Channel. Crypto investor sues Elon Musk for $258 billion over Dogecoin pyramid scheme. The lawsuit filed by plaintiff Keith Johnson in New York has accused Musk and his companies, Tesla and SpaceX, of running a pyramid scheme to inflate the price of the cryptocurrency. The lawsuit added defendants falsely and deceptively claim that Dogecoin is a legitimate investment when it has no value at all. Okay, so why here? Why now? Why? According to the lawsuit, since defendant Musk and his corporation, SpaceX and Tesla Incorporated, began purchasing, developing, investing, promoting, supporting, and operating Dogecoin in 2019, plaintiff and the class have lost approximately $86 billion. You mean they lost by because they were following what was a hyped up cryptocurrency that's pegged to the US dollar, and like Bitcoin, it's meeting its maker. So again, people don't complain when everything is smooth sailing, but the moment that they start losing is when all hell breaks loose and they find whatever they can that they ignored previously because they were making billions. Suddenly they're losing because the reality of this is it's all BS. It's pegged to the US dollar and that's why it has any value. Suddenly they start complaining. This is an article over at The Hill by Sarakshi. Sorry, pardon me. I'm going to try and pronounce this name right. Sarakshi Rai. Let's see. Let's scroll through here. The lawsuit also details Musk's tweet and videos on Dogecoin over the years. The lawsuit highlights how Musk referred to himself as the Doge father while promoting his appearance on NBC's Saturday Night Live. Now, if you're on Saturday Night Live and you've invested on anything that's satirical, then you are basically following some technical that you think you're going to profit from. And when it does collapse around you, unless you're on the inside loop where you know that you're going to start losing, so you either short it or you sell just to get out from under it, you basically buttered your own bread. So eat it. Johnson, who is referred to in the lawsuit as an American citizen who was defrauded out of money by defendants' Dogecoin crypto pyramid scheme, is suing for $86 billion in damages, representing the drop in the currency, asking for triple those losses and an additional $172 billion, probably in punitive, an attempt to be punitive. He also wants Musk and his companies ordered to stop promoting Dogecoin and that Dogecoin trading be declared gambling under U.S. and New York law. Yeah, well, I mean, if they lost money, then they're an investor. It has inherent risk. This is going to get thrown out. This is just crap, in my opinion. Let's see what happens. I guess we're going to watch it. I'm going to mark this so that we can watch this. We'll watch how this thing plays out. So let's continue on. Otherwise, I'll be here forever. Which is fine if there were people in chat and talking with me, but come and hang out. Throw your 2 cents into, or 8.6 cents, which is what Dogecoin is worth, I think. I'd have to look it up. I didn't look it up. I know that Bitcoin is kind of crashing. Today, though, it's up $230, and, well, 210, but it wasn't feeling very positive, and I think that it might start after noon, it might start noon Eastern, it might start trending down again. Same thing happened with Dow. It started out good and now it's in negative territory or flat, but it's Friday. Unless some really horrible news comes out, then the stock market will probably be flat. At any rate, the doctor who pushed hydrochloroquine gets 60-day prison sentence for storming Capitol on January 6th. You know, same thing, the law tube people were saying, like, some really good people were caught up in the frenzy. No. Critically thinking people don't get caught up in frenzies, okay? Critically thinking people say, holy crap, that's bad. I'm going to go in that direction and get the hell out of Dodge. That's not what happened. Everybody that took part in storming into the Capitol should be held accountable for it. They knew full freaking well what was going on. And when you see a column of people in fatigues or in camis going through a doorway and they've got zip ties and people are chanting, kill Pence. Yeah, you better have your freaking head around you. Get out. Situational awareness. Be street smart. Think critically. That doesn't, you know, it's willful ignorance. And you can't sit there and say, oh, I was just all caught up in it. It's a garbage tactic. I can't get away with that. Oh, I didn't know that I had to pay my taxes. You know, if it was just hanging out in front, I don't care. But if you're storming into it, you're causing violence, you're harming people, you should be held accountable for it. I mean, this isn't just a piece of paper that you're filing. This is, you're breaking into the federal government. Your voice isn't being heard at that point. People are going, you're trying to kill people. Y'all are crazy. But it's willful ignorance. Go get an education and hang out and talk about things and think critically about stuff. That's what school is all about. Not an echo chamber of your own ideology. Go in. Why do you think college is so enlightening? It's because it shows you beyond your silo of acceptance. Basic sociological machinations there, okay? There's more than just your in-group that exists in this world. And you are not right all the time. Learn it. It's called humility. It's actually taught in the Bible, right? Right? Is that taught in the Bible? Maybe you can look it up. Simon Gold, the founder of anti-COVID-19 restriction group America's Frontline Doctors, pleaded guilty in March to entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds when she stormed the Capitol last year. Gold will pay $9,500 fine, which is nothing. The largest amount of money ordered to be paid by any of the 200 January 6 rioters already sentenced, in addition to serving 60 days. And this ignorance about the unproven drug hydrochloroquine does nothing. You know, some people have the ability to fight the COVID-19 virus. This is just anomaly. It isn't a proven, demonstrable solution to COVID-19. And a doctor that is pushing that should have their license taken away. I certainly wouldn't want to be treated by some derp that thinks that hydrochloroquine is going to solve my COVID-19 problems. This is an article over at The Hill by Chloe Fulmer. There isn't really much else to this article, although it does always, they always provide more context to it. But America's frontline doctors characterize Gold's trial and sentencing as political persecution, which is just BS, and raised over $400,000 to support the prison-bound doctor, which Cooper calls a disservice to the true victims that day, according to CNN. No, they are not a victim. They are a perpetrator of violence and supporting that violence in the Capitol. Gold stormed the Capitol alongside other rioters and spoke to them through a megaphone once inside. Boom. Stop the steal. Prove it. Show me some evidence, please. Somebody out there, show me some evidence. Just show it. Just come on here, post a link. Let's see. Let's see what it is. There isn't any. It's all ignorance. It's all misunderstanding of how the process even works. Like this bogus ballots being pulled out from the blah, blah, blah. No, you are lacking context because you're ignorant of what really went on and what goes on. You may think it's this way or that way, but even I suspect I'm not a particularly trusting person. Well, I'm not a trusting person. And I don't like the idea that the public doesn't get to audit the software in voting machines. I think the public should have a right to look at the source code of voting machines. And if, because the security apparatus in around the world will look at it to see if there are holes. And some people will keep it secret and they're unscrupulous and unethical. And others are bug hunters who will find it and say, here it is. I've found a bug. Give me the bounty. And fix this piece of crap software, and others will just provide solutions and say, okay, here, I found a bug, go and fix it. But more eyes on it need to be on it because software is only as good as the programmers and the ones who audit it. And nobody is absolutely perfect, but you can get wisdom through the masses to some degree. More flaws would be found in the voting software if more people were looking at it. And I still have concerns because I have very little faith in humans not trying to exploit other humans because they think it's a freaking game and not the future of mankind. Humankind. Let me just say humankind again. Mankind refers to everyone, but I know that it's not generally, well, I mean, it's, some people don't accept that. At any rate, the idea is that I still suspect the software and everything, the infrastructure, because you can do man-in-the-middle attacks. Security is only as good as the security in place. If there is a weak link, if I can get into the system and manipulate, and I know enough about it, I mean, just like countless other issues that have existed in cybersecurity, the moment that I have the enough knowledge where I can get in there and tweak a bit, then I can manipulate the numbers. But that isn't what's taking place right now. It isn't sophisticated enough to warrant, getting rid of electronic voting. In fact, I think that it should be expanded because there's greater distance between voting places. There isn't time. This isn't a 10,000 farmers that have to show up on Tuesday and vote. No, you've got 300 million people that need to show up and vote. And so more election locations need to be made and make a compelling voting system that is secure, but yet publicly audited so that people with an interest and an understanding, subject matter expertise, and skill can look at the code and look at the infrastructure and say, this is right and this is wrong. But that's not what's happening. Let's move on to the next article. It's in the Hatch Ideas channel. Soaring U.S. car prices compel buyers to travel thousands of miles for deals. After an auto dealer demanded $10,000 above sticker price for a new hybrid vehicle, car shopper Michael Rathjen of Kirkland, Washington, resolved to pay no more than the manufacturer's suggested retail price of the vehicle of his choice, and he never dreamed his quest would drive him 8,000 miles, or sorry, 8,000, I'm an idiot, 3,000 miles from their home. I'm calling across the country. I'm thinking this is not going to be possible. I'm not going to find a dealer selling at MSRP. Yeah, you're right. We were looking at a car and found one, but the moment that it landed on the lot, there was a premium applied because it's supply and demand, and I still think that it's greedflation. If a car is produced and it has an MSRP, that should be the price because that's the margin you're supposed to be working in. If the manufacturer raises the price, then so be it. But just because the seller gets it at X price and the cost of living has increased, guess what? Your margin should be smaller. You shouldn't be screwing over people well above and beyond. I mean, it basically is turning it into a black market to acquire a car. And the dealerships are, the dealers, get it? Black market. Anyway. Yeah. And all I wanted to do was get it a new car, get out from the car. Oh, and by the way, the Dow is dropping. It's only down 100, but it's pretty flat, and there's about four more hours left in the day for trading. So this article is over at The Guardian by Alan Chernoff. Car prices are just outlandish. If you want a nice car, you're looking at $80,000 nowadays, $60,000 plus. But if you get one that's a clunker from 5 years ago and doesn't have a warranty, unless you want to withstand phone call after phone call about your expired warranty, or pay a premium of $3,000 for an aftermarket warranty, which is pretty damn difficult to actually get, put into effect. It becomes a proxy fight, really. Anyway, this drives me nuts because my car, for instance, is worth more now than it ever was. And yet, if I sell it, the car that I really want is an old beater now. I want a rat rod, but that's not really accessible for me as a daily driver. But my car is now just outlandishly expensive. It's really bad out there. So everybody should just stop buying cars unless you absolutely need to. And don't endorse this by purchasing. I mean, the moment that you start allowing these prices to take hold, you're basically endorsing this. You're saying yes to higher prices. Yeah, I know some people need to purchase a car, but do you? Get something else. Buy a horse. The next article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel. Fed up with endless cookie consent boxes, the UK plans to kill them off. The government says new data reforms will reduce the number of banners that appear on the website asking people to consent to cookies. How about just stop tracking me like that? Just track on the macro. You don't need personalized anything for me. Some people are appreciative of that, but it shouldn't be. I like this site and others all have that banner that says track or don't track data adequacy. However, some are worried that the shift may move British data standards too far from those in the EU, threatening a so-called adequacy arrangement that allows for the free flow of data between the two. EU adequacy decisions do not require countries to have the same rules. Our view is that these reforms are fully compatible with maintaining a free flow of personal data from Europe. These reforms will need to carefully balance maintenance of this hard-won decision. Some are concerned that reform could threaten the EU's decision to allow free flow of personal data. These are people that are going back and forth talking about if the UK rules are incompatible with the EU's rules, except that I think that even the US should follow the EU and say, you have the right to be forgotten. You have the right to not be tracked. And that is the end of it. You can track in the macro that somebody is accessing the site and they are following this path through the site, but you can't keep my IP. You can't keep my identity. You can't inform others of the same. Each site has to have its own login or it's attached to an OAuth login that I equally prevents people from storing my identity if I so choose to not be identified as an individual. Yep, they're doing construction still in my backyard. Let's continue on. The next article is going to be one that's going to be interesting, and I'm sure that we'll hear about it in the courts if the people so choose. Hold on a second. I'm trying to do something, and I have a microphone stand that blocks my view, which is not really the brightest thing. So, yeah, I have a thermostat that if I don't poke it periodically, it thinks that I'm not home. And then my office warms up. So yeah, it marked me away and the temperature in here is probably about 80 degrees now. Not really something you should worry about. SpaceX fires some of the employees who criticized Elon Musk in open letter, says a report. So SpaceX dismissed some of those who had organized the letter criticizing Tesla CEO's public actions and tweeting as distracting and embarrassing. Yes. That's right. Nobody should be able to talk about senior leadership. Did you know that? You lose your First Amendment rights when you are using corporate assets. This should be interesting. Barbara Kohlmeier over at MarketWatch wrote this article. And it says, that's according to a New York Times article. So remember how this works. I post an aggregated news article. It's from MarketWatch, but MarketWatch references New York Times. You can get to all of this through Omtown. The terminations were also confirmed in an email obtained by the Times from Gwyneth Shotwell, SpaceX's president and chief operating officer, who reportedly said a number of those involved were no longer working with the company. And that's probably because they have contracts, employment contracts, that might stipulate you're not allowed. The letter, solicitations, and general process made employees feel uncomfortable, intimidated, and bullied, and or angry because the letter pressured them to sign on to something that did not reflect their views, Shotwell wrote. We have too much critical work to accomplish and no need for this kind of overreaching activism. Yeah, it's the same thing that I say about a company investing based on an ideological or political bent. No, a company should not be allowed to because it represents the totality of those employed inside a company. And that means that each individual has to discount that voice outside. When I'm talking to somebody and I say, well, no, I don't agree with the investment or statements of the CEO. I'm the one that has to defend my reputation because I think that the CEO is an idiot. And that's not what should happen. So when somebody invests or somebody talks about this or that or the other, it should be abundantly clear that they are speaking of their own political, ideological bent, whatever it might be, from religion to money to anything, or they are a representative of SpaceX or whatever company, and thus speaking from the perspective of SpaceX. So even having a PR person saying X, Y, and Z about the company, and then to sit there and say that they have too much critical work to accomplish and no need for this kind of overreaching activism, they are trying to dictate what an applicable amount of activism is. Of course, anything that is distracting from their particular internal narrative is overreaching activism. But I guarantee you, if this person wasn't being paid to say this, and well, no, they probably wouldn't say any of this if they weren't being paid to say it. So, really, what this is you have an imbalance of power. And this is economic theory, this is sociological theory or sociology theory. The person that is providing basically has dictatorial powers. And these people were fired because they wanted to have a voice. And the only people that agree with this type of thing are dictators. And believe me, I know because I've had conversations where, because the person has authority, they think that they can basically get louder or threaten or use terminology that is damn near mob type of speaking. Today is turning into another day. I'm only halfway through my news, and I've already been doing this for an hour. The next article is in the Hatch Ideas channel. Two of Europe's biggest airports are cutting back on flights to stop labor shortages. I can actually accelerate some of this. Like this one is basically they're cutting flights, which will stop labor shortages, but it's going to drive prices through the roof. This is an article from businessinsider.com by Stephen Jones. And let's see if they even broach that. Let's see. Global aviation has been battling a shortage of baggage handlers, airport management staff, and pilots at a time when demand for travel is reaching the summer peak. Well, why? Why? Why is there a shortage? It's probably because they're tired of being abused financially. Look at the inflation level. Look at the CPI. What used to be $100 worth of groceries and filled four bags is now $100 and it's one bag. However, a review by the airport found that a number of companies providing services continued to suffer severe staff shortages that would lead to further queues, delays, and cancellations. So, kind of like, don't test for COVID, and COVID infections go away. It's bullshit, but the moment that you stop testing, suddenly, it declines. The number of people that are sick are decline. No, that's not what happens. You're just not testing, and it's blooming across the land. It's willful ignorance. In this case, it's going to lead to profitability for those who are still paying, because the company's going to get rich because they're cutting flights, which allows them to say, well, there are fewer flights, and so they're in great demand, so we can charge more. Let's see. Let's see if that actually happens. Well, they don't talk about it in this Business Insider article. Let's continue on. The next article is Valve VR patent stirs up fresh hopes about a rumored standalone Deckard headset. Valve's most recent VR headset was 2019's high-powered, high-priced Valve Index. I don't know about high-priced. It was $1,000 fully. The full kit is $1,000 for VR, for crying out loud, with that resolution and that capability and the fact that it's part of the ecosystem in Steam, spectacular amount of value in the Valve Index. If I wanted to hang out with cables, I would have kept it, but I sold it. But rumors have long been swirling that the company is working on another device, a standalone headset, codenamed Deckard. Well, here to give that rumored pot a fresh stir is a recently published patent application from the company that could reveal Deckard itself. Yay, but patents rarely embody everything. I'd have to look at the actual patent. But anyway, this is an article over at The Verge by James Vincent, and it shows what might be the Deckard headset, which looks like the Valve. I'm not sure of the cabling and whatnot that is in display here. Oh, wait, that is the Valve Index, I think. Oh, no, that's the Deckard, sorry. So what you're looking at are the designs from within the patent. Different cables, different connectors. It looks big and bulky. It's definitely VR, not AR. They have that same face gasket, which is great. I actually bought aftermarket gaskets and stuff so that I could swap it out between people and they didn't have to worry about my face sweat, because your face sweats a lot. I actually bought an aftermarket fan that sockets into the feature connector. It's pretty neat. In a recent YouTube video, Lynch pulled out a number of Deckard-coded dev tools and like the latest Steam VR beta, suggesting Valve is quite far along with productizing whatever this new headset may turn out to be, and the recent launch of the Steam Deck proved that Valve can still surprise and delight and frustrate. Very interesting. So let's hope that this is a wireless VR headset. I'll be buying it. I really loved the VR Index, the Valve Index. Pixar's Lightyear was banned in 14 markets over same-sex relationship as Disney grapples with history. That's the next article, by the way. As it grapples with history of stymieing LGBTQ, they left off the plus. Representation in its movies. I see this happening usually in siloed cultures that don't want anything challenging their particular and technically it's a religious ideological bent, because it's not really about business, it's purely society. Basically denying the existence of the LGBTQ plus community, which has been around forever. The difference is that in history past, they were either stoning them or killing them. Anybody that didn't identify in the binary. Nowadays, you know, there isn't as much lead paint in the world, and people can be who they want to be, and it's getting more and more accepted, even though it's always been present, just oppressed. And like others saying that they are oppressed, just wait. If things go the wrong way, the oppression that the LGBTQ plus community feels now, will be it would be considered light as opposed to what might come down the pike. And we were headed in the right direction. The LGBTQ plus community should be accepted for who they are as a person and not categorized. I don't even like the idea of categorizing people, you know, as in the LGBTQ plus community. I think that everybody is a human being. And, this same-sex kiss in an animated movie is suddenly the worst possible thing for some country and other markets. And really, it's an ideological bent. But when you look into the culture, you peel back the layers of the onions, there's other things to worry about. Let people be who they want to be, just accept people for who they are, the content of their character. It's just such a beautiful phrase. Judge people by the content of their character. And And you loving whoever you want to love doesn't really matter to, shouldn't matter to anybody. You know, if you have to walk your child by somebody and they're, somebody is kissing somebody of the same sex, same gender, and your kid asks, you know what? Good. Talk to your kid and say, well, you know, there's a whole host of people in a broad range of in the human condition, and this is one of the things that people do and accept it. But the only way that your kid is going to not accept it right out of the gate is if they have been raised to not accept anything other than binary, which really speaks to raising kid instead of, you know, teaching a kid how to be a human being. Let's click the link. This is businessinsider.com. Pixar's Lightyear was banned in 14 markets. It's an article written by Travis Clark. Could also face an uphill battle for release in China. I guarantee you it will be the world's largest theatrical market. It's a market that is also an echo chamber of a particular political, fiscal, religious, everything cultural dynamic. You try and challenge it, and you get a rapid and sometimes volatile response. The bans follow Disney's messy response to Florida's Don't Say Gay bill and ensuing backlash. And it's a shame. And Disney has to essentially buy back its soul for its historical stymieing of LGBTQ representation, even though the LGBTQ community really enjoys Disney. Let's continue on. The next article is in the Mobile Channel. Doctors pull off kidney transplant with no immune suppressing drugs, which is a spectacular movement, moving the needle in terms of transplants. Pediatricians at Stanford Medicine have now developed a method of carrying out kidney transplants in immunosuppressed children using stem cells from parents, negating the need for these drugs. Beautiful. But there is an ideological bent against stem cells because of the perceived source, even though you can get stem cells otherwise. These undifferentiated cells can be turned into anything, and using stem cells from parents means that the genetics are aligned with the offspring to a greater degree than some rando. Let's click the link. I'll be moving on. I've got about five more articles. This article is by Gianna Melillo. Not sure of the inflection there. Sorry about that. Kidney transplantation, although necessary, is associated with a host of challenges for patients, including lifelong reliance on immunosuppressants. Time to grow those kidneys from the genes of the parents or the person themselves. But there's always issues with that. You know, if you have the same thing that causes some malady within the kidneys, then the genetic predisposition might actually be within that still. Let's see. Three children have undergone the procedure so far, and all of them had a rare genetic disease called Schimke immunoosseous dysplasia, an immune disorder. A case series was published in the New England Journal of Medicine today. The patients first received bone marrow stem cells from parents, then 5 to 10 months later underwent a kidney transplant, and they've healed and recovered and are doing things they never thought would be possible, said the parent, Jessica Davenport, in a statement. Pardon me. One child received transplants from Jessica and the other from their father. All patients no longer have Schimke immunoosseous dysplasia and have been living for 22 to 34 months. Beautiful, beautiful. This is technology's benefit, folks. This isn't somebody wishing. This isn't somebody holding prayer. This isn't a miracle. This is science. This is technology. This is society leaning into its own course of action instead of allowing the demise of life. And yet, where this is important, the same type of action is being ignored elsewhere. But that's probably going to be another discussion somewhere else. Apple's iMessage, this is the next article. Apple's iMessage edit and unsend features in iOS 16 sparking concerns about abuse. Yes, I believe that there is a possibility of abuse if somebody chooses to edit and there is no demonstrable way to show the actual edit, then you can have issues. Although it says delivered and edited or recalled or whatever, if I don't have the ability to go back, it can cause problems in terms of due diligence and the context for phrasing that shows up afterward, right? So it says, don't rush, I've got it covered. Hey, Gabe, can you forward me the meeting notes? And it says delivered and then edited in this picture. This is an article by appleinsider.com, and the author is Amber Neely. And this is the very first thing. When I heard that they were going to offer up editing capabilities to messages, I totally saw this coming. This was definitely an issue, particularly unsend. And it needs to be marked as message recalled or something other than just purging it from the line of discussion. Now, I haven't installed the beta of iMessage in my device devices because I'm not developing anything right now. So I don't need the developer update. But rest assured, they're getting feedback about how to address this issue. And hopefully, it says, of course, Apple didn't just say that you'd be able to edit messages. They'd also announced that you'd be able to delete messages. And if you're like us, this is the author of the article at Apple Insider speaking, that may be a feature that you'd already been at least partially hoping for. And if you do a lot of talk with your coworkers, family members, friends across iMessage, you've probably accidentally sent a message to the wrong person. I have. Typically, it's not much of a problem deleting those sort of messages, which we always realize when we've sent it mere seconds after we've sent them. It's a great way to keep messages clean and tidy. So it's not a perfect feature. This person is just writing and writing and writing. Of course, the 15-minute time limitation does help. Again, yeah, so it'll be locked in after 15 minutes. I think that's quite a long time. So the worry that some people, especially younger people, would be able to use it to harass peers and erase all evidence. Well, it's never erased. Once it's sent through the system, it can probably be subpoenaed. I'd be surprised if it's purged. There's probably a document change list that you can see once you, behind the scenes, you'll be able to pull its entire history. Because everything gets time stamped because of forensic analysis so far. So this next article is in the Law Nerd channel. Did a professor just leave a top law school and refuse to grade exams on the way out? That's one way to get out of reading papers. Let's click the link. It'll take us over to abovethelaw.com. And it says, update. The school apparently managed to get in touch with the professor and grades were posted this morning. Yeah, probably all A's. This article was written by Joe Patrice. Let's see here. Final exams concluded over a month ago, but a number of worried UCLA law students say that they still haven't gotten grades for some of their classes yet, which is wild because UCLA is showing students everyone else's grades. Hey, bam. I guess they might have missed that because the final grades didn't get posted. Yes, the same week we reported on the school accidentally distributing the GPA spreadsheet that showed everybody's grades to every other student. Actual GPA. It's funny though, because this actually used to happen. You used to see what somebody actually got. We're hearing that one professor hasn't turned in grades yet. And worse, students say they've been told the professor isn't just refusing to grade the test, he's actually ghosted the school completely. Well, apparently it's been remedied. So this is apparently a nothing But I'm sure that the professor made the determination and then was reminded that they were in an employment contract, which is usually a one-sided contract. Doesn't really protect the professor at all. No, unless they're tenure, and then it's a little bit heavier hitting. So apparently it was fixed. So, but again, a professor just walking out, that happens quite a bit, particularly with adjuncts. And really what would end up happening is the program manager would either read all of the material and grade it based on their subject matter expertise. Typically, a program manager has the ability to do everything within the channel, except maybe niche areas, very specialty areas, or well, it doesn't really matter. The point is that usually a program manager will be able to find somebody else that can grade the materials if a professor does ghost them, or the program manager themselves will be able to do it one way or the other. Let's go on to the next article. Last one of two, the penultimate. Fed and other central banks experiencing a great awakening, aliens, Mohammed El Aryan says. He's been popping up in my news feeds lately and aggregated quite a bit. So central banks are finally getting with the program and stepping up their fight against inflation. So I'm gonna click the link. Takes us over to CNBC and an article by Fred Imbert. I'm not sure what's happening. Interesting. I won't be able to talk about this beyond just linking to the article. I'll have to figure out what's going on. My browser just kind of borked at the something that's not being displayed over at CNBC, which is fairly new, and I'll remedy it after the show. And finally, the last one for today is the only Top Gun, or only in Top Gun, can the U.S. military solve our multitude of problems in real life, plowing money into shiny fighters, fighter jets, while Americans struggle and the climate burns makes us less safe. This is an article over at Common Dreams. And what's interesting about this is that is absolutely true, although, again, Common Dreams titles tend to be inflammatory in nature. It says, in real life, plowing money into shiny fighter jets while Americans struggle and the climate burns makes us less safe. The article is by Lindsay Kashgarian. Says by Other Worlds. I'm not really sure what. I guess it's an article that's published in Common Dreams, but by way of otherwords.org. Let's see. Somewhere at a theater near your Top Gun Maverick is serving up feel-good drama about a plucky U.S. Navy pilot who dispatches some unnamed bad guys before he gets the girl. Actually, this one in Maverick, I believe it is revealed as being Russian fighters. In the original Top Gun, there was no name, no branding, no nothing, just a nameless enemy. But in Maverick, I thought that it was actually named. So the article is talking about the next budget, 800 billion. We're broaching a trillion, which is just, it's about a 15th of the economy right now. Needless to say, Maverick is not coming to the rescue, but that isn't stopping some members of Congress from demanding ever more money for the military. And really, this is about boots on the ground in various formats, right? But one thing that I have noticed in history is that there isn't any change unless the conflict is catastrophic, right? We were at war with Japan to the point where they figured nuclear weapons would be the only solution to combat a bloody war, where both sides lose an immense number of human lives. And so they dropped two bombs. And US is the only one that ever dropped nuclear weapons on somebody else, thankfully, and sadly at the same time. And Vietnam, same thing. It was an intractable position. Afghanistan, intractable position. Great loss, but still pales in comparison to dropping two bombs on Japan. Hiroshima and Nagasaki, two bombs, wiped out entire cities and all of the people within it, and billions of dollars worth of destruction on top of it. And then we send in engineers, and then they start, you know, the Japanese culture just took hold of that engineering mindset, and now they're juggernauts. I think that it's great in terms of recovery, but sad that it ever took place. But these conflicts are just intractable when they are at low level. It has to be catastrophic. Otherwise, there's no change. Civil War was catastrophic, and then there was an ideological alignment with getting rid of slavery, and the people that lost dropped into the shadows, and now we have it all coming back. But for all this time, it's been in the shadows, hidden away under the rock, and then when the internet came out, everybody started talking about it in the shadows again. But the moment you shine light on it and the abuse of it and the ideological bent needed to be this way and the religious bent to be this way, you end up basically the people that think critically about it going, you're saying the quiet things out loud again. Do you know how crazy it all sounds? And that's even coming out in the January 6th hearings. Which again, some people in LawTube say that it has no legal basis. Not sure how that works, but okay, I'm not an attorney. But this article is talking about the fact that spending all of this money hasn't solved anything, but it has prevented further penetration of abuses, but it's abuse on the other side of the fence, right? So you're killing people to stop people from killing people. Instead of everybody understanding that humans are humans and we need to find the solution for this common issue, which is conflict, it's all about resources, it's all about power, it's all about sociopathy, and to take a life is there's no redeeming that. I mean, it's just a horrible thing, but sometimes it has to take place because others are killing others. And so this has grown bigger and bigger and bigger, and you have to use phrases like shock and awe, and you have to throw 5,000 people at the front line and they all die. And you still have to just walk away from it because it's intractable. Many of the issues are tribal. Many of the issues are sociopathic power. They want control. And they want the benefit of running a country and privatizing the public wealth and so on and so forth. There's so much to it that it can't just be discussed in a little soapbox here on Twitch for 4 minutes. We have a lot of issues here. And this one article starts talking about it. So I encourage you to go over and read this article. So for instance, all of this adds up to a Pentagon that has so much money, it literally doesn't know where it all goes, and the government that can barely imagine solutions beyond Maverick in an F-A-18 Super Hornet that the Navy lent to the studio. While some lawmakers want to add even more to the Pentagon budget that is already higher than it was at the peak of the Vietnam War, others see another way forward. A new bill from the representatives Barbara Lee and Mark Pocan would cut $100 billion from the Pentagon budget to fund neglected priorities and bring some discipline and sense to the Pentagon. But these large industrial orders are adding to the mitigation of inflation because it's feeding into the circle of economics between the military-industrial complex and public. So there's a lot of taxation and a lot of wealth that's in the circle. Unfortunately, this is usually higher budget manufacturing, so all of that wealth ends up in people who are already in the pockets of people who are already super wealthy and connected and can weather the tide of inflation versus people who are making $7 an hour because the states won't mandate 15 which still in this day and age isn't enough to pay for the median rent, let alone trying to buy a house. Why? Because we have more billionaires than ever, more extremely wealthy millionaires than ever, and you don't get that way by allowing for great equity and inclusion and opportunity. You have to be exploitive. And when 20% are ultra rich, that 70% is the bottom of the middle class that used to make up the bulk of the mitochondria of the economy. And that's what I call the middle class. It's the mitochondria of the cell that is the economy. But now it's all really, them versus us kind of mentality, and that needs to go away. For the limited great good that the ultra wealthy provide out of the kindness of their own tax deductive hearts. It still belies just how much wealth is stored within a very few people. At any rate, that is the last of my soapboxing for today. A whole bunch of articles are going to be in the show notes over on YouTube and in the podcast. Thank you very much for coming and hanging out. If you didn't stay, shame on you. You should have stayed. You should have said something. Come and hang out. Follow me. We'll talk more about news within the crossroads of business, technology, and society. Thanks for coming. Bye-bye. Yeah, I have to look down. I still don't have this button. Whatever.